Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Practice the art of conscious stopping. Stop the narrative to open to the grace of the moment. This is all understanding. Knowing that there is something larger than ourselves that we are experiencing here today. Something larger than ourselves. So we are the drop that surrenders to the ocean. We are the breath within the breath. We are the heart of the one that knows no other. Only that the heart of hearts rests in all of us, where the divine presence can flower. So this something larger is expanding within the field of our awareness as an open-hearted awareness, not so much a narrative of the mind that has a past and a future and some kind of strategy to achieve a goal, but there is an aspect of awareness that is not bound by control or thought or judgment. When we set ourselves free of this narrative of my way or the highway, well, then we find ourselves shifting into freedom. Free of the me person. And we breathe. And then we enter into the question, well, then who am I if I am not the me? And then our little narrative from the me person says, yeah, you're the me still. But you're not bound by the me anymore, because you've expanded into a field of awareness that is not concretized or opinionated. You have moved into a field of awareness that knows I am one with the tree and the little humble spider on my car. I am one with the rattlesnake on the path and the girlfriend by my side. Neither is superior or lesser. And so an equanimity begins to flower in the field of our awareness. There is but one life, outpicturing in multiplicity. And we come here to touch that one life with our awareness, with our felt knowing, in this web of knowing that we all share. So this Sunday we open to this discovery process, as I hear Helen Keller saying, what is life but a glorious adventure? And so we get to explore this glorious adventure with fresh eyes and with a curiosity that sets us free into another dimension of realization that is sweet and is waiting for us to feast. So when you're ready, open your eyes, enter into the moment with me, where grace abounds. I'm doing this series this month of July on freedom. I always seem to speak about freedom when it comes to July. And the thing about freedom that I know is you can't give somebody their freedom. You have to take your freedom. A little parakeet named Lucretia. Trey and I had Lucretia in a cage in our apartment in Atlanta many years ago. And when we bought our first house, we had a solarium, which had a room with a big glass window, and you could see the trees and the light. And her little cage was set in the solarium. And we thought, with all the plants and the trees in the house, we'll open the cage door and say, Lucretia, here you go. You have all of this to fly. But she wouldn't leave the cage. She'd sit at the doorway. She'd say, there's freedom, but I'm afraid to leave the security of what I know. Now, she got to this place where she would crawl around the cage and stand on top of the cage, but she would never let go of the clutch of her security blanket. So she was set free, but she wouldn't take her freedom. She never left the cage. And then, as fate would have it, we had an alarm system in the house, and someone broke into the house, and the alarm system went off, and I came home from work, and there she was on the bottom of her cage. And so, humbly, we took the cage out to the street, vowed never to have another bird again, because we were grieving the loss of little Lucretia, who was the victim of a burglary. And then we get to find out who we are in those moments of life, when life gives us these little hurdles. So I guess I preface that by saying I recently came back last night from the journey to the West Coast where I spread my twin sister's ashes. And through the grace of my little sister's efforts, everybody was there that needed to be there. People came down from Alaska with their children. They came from North Dakota with their children. They came from Idaho with their children. And then I came from Alabama. And then you encounter people along the way, and I was wondering, am I still stuck in my cage, or have I set myself free from a narrative of the family dynamics? And it's so interesting, because in having the conversation with the different elements of the family dynamic, I got to see where their cages were. And of course, lovingly, I would invite them to set themselves free. My nieces and nephews were raised in a fear-based religion, one that had hell. And my niece told me that when they were little kids, they would have to be in a play every year. The three children, it was, I guess it's the go to hell play, where if you commit a sin, or if you're in a car accident, and if you're drinking or doing other nasty things, you will burn in the pits of hell. So she said, as a little girl, I lived in fear. And I said, you know that there is no place called hell. You know that. And so at this stage of maybe 30, she's hearing a different narrative, with an attempt to me to say, you can be free of this fear-based teaching. And so I said, you know, there is a love-based teaching that you can place over the fear-based teaching that says that spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And for those who don't fit the criteria of what an acceptable life is, if someone says that it's going to mean that your destiny is this, you don't have to accept that as your destiny, because they said that that's going to be your destiny. So I found myself meeting the cage of yesterday with this new way of seeing it today, and not trying to preach to them an alternative pathway, but to say we're always at choice point. And if we choose love over fear, well, maybe then there's hope. And I was so thrilled that all three of my two nieces and my nephew that were raised in that tradition, they've all stepped away from this biblically based fear into a more expansive way of connecting on the planet. So we all are challenged to explore that something bigger. Today I'm speaking about a life that is larger than ourselves. And so many of us get trapped in this illusion of me that then creates suffering. Through grace, 2 days ago, my student Mark Accomando sent me a little video of my teacher, Llewellyn Von Lee, called Return to Love. And he talked about how there is this love of the universe that's waiting for us to enter in. And there's a longing in the soul to go home to our true nature. And he says, at the planet, at this time, we need to know that we're all connected in the one life. I remember when I first saw him, he was so alien to a religious scientist, because he said, it's not about you. It's never been about you. So all your treatment work to have a better you is kind of crazy, isn't it? He said, it's about God, and God is everywhere. And so could we, as the lovers of God, open to this intimate connection with the one life that wants to reveal itself through all creation? And then he, in his beautiful thing that Llewellyn sent on the video of YouTube, Return to Love, he said, a famous Christian mystic said that the one life lives within all creation and guides it to its true nature. In the spider, in the rattlesnake, in the tree, in the kumquat. It's so funny, Jean Ann, my beloved, she would take little caterpillars from her garden. She'd bring them in, they'd be starting to spin a cocoon, and she'd have them in the jar. She gave me one year, and I watched this cocoon all of a sudden open, and there was a butterfly sitting on the cocoon. And then the lid was off, and of course there was the cage of the thing for the butterfly, and the butterfly had to have enough courage to stand on top of the jar, which was its home, after it left its cocoon, looking around at this foreign place, and then she started flying away. And she landed on one of my plants. And then I'm putting a whole bouquet, the codependent David. He put a bouquet of flowers thinking, well, maybe she'll drink from the flowers. Hi, beloved. Oh, there's my twin sister of another mother. She had a twin brother and I had a twin sister. And so we have this connection. He's no longer on the planet and my twin is no longer on the planet. But now we've got each other. I'm probably 50 years older than you, but hey, I'll take what the universe gives me. So it's so sweet to see you. Yeah, so we're down the very last day at this event with all the family, and my little sister wanted to orchestrate the hike to hell, you might say, because it was 8 miles down, or the hike to heaven, which was 8 miles up. I said, I'll go the down route because it's a little easier. It's at 74. Well, I was at the airport the other day, and I was going through that thing where you go through where they see if there's metal and say, if you're 75, you don't have to go through that and take your shoes off. So 74 count? Nope. Sorry, fella. And so I went through this and took off the shoes and everything, and I'm going through this thing. And as I get out, they pulled me over because I have these things. What do they call this when you roll up your pants? A cuff. And they thought I had something hidden in my cuffs. I said, I have cuffs because I have short legs, and every pants that I wear, I have to roll the cuffs up or I'm going to trip over the cuff. So I had that little moment of life showing you how we all get to navigate, and we're going to experience sometimes a block in our way, and could we do it with a sense of humor? So these little girls up at the walk to hell and heaven, they found all these little caterpillars that had fallen from the trees, all my nieces and nephews, and they're all running around with caterpillars on their hand, and at the same time, butterflies are flitting around the head. And I said to these little girls that were going to squish the butterflies, I said, you know, these become that. And I'm hoping that there's a connection there. Not that they're a commodity to be squished, but there's a life here to be acknowledged. Now, those subtle little things to me are wake-up calls. My little nephew, Will, was swimming in the pond the other day, and there was a frog sitting on a lily pad. So my little sister, his grandma, Ohm, that's grandma in German, Ohm said, Will, that's a life. And so he rescued the little frog, and he took it out and he set it free. What if simple little things like that help us realize that there's something bigger that we belong to, that it's not about us, you know? It's about this one life coming to be recognized and felt. And so that was the journey that I so lovingly entered into, and it's transformational. And then you realize that life is here for us to show us where we are oftentimes, where we're bound, where our thoughts may be contracted around certain things. And then when you meet a contraction that's coming at you with their contraction, could we meet it in a loving way? Tell me more, as my friend Pam Hardy would say. And when they want to go on and on and on, well, tell me more. And I woke up every morning to scripture being read to me by my brother-in-law. I thought, well, thank you. And then I handed him Hebrews book 5 so he could synthesize that for me and tell me the skinny. And he did, and he's still doing that. And so we get to find a way to communicate in this journey home, and realizations that we're already there, we're already home. So let's see, what was I going to talk about today? So I'm trying to prepare my consciousness to travel out there to do a ceremony to spread my twin sister's ashes, and I'm knowing that I'm going to meet a lot of cages, and I did. I met every cage with every oof, and so I trust the universe will give me everything I need. And I turned on one of those little things in the plane, and you plug it in, and movies and this. And here's a movie called Rosie and Frank. It's from Ireland. You will love this. Rosie was an Irish lady, and it was all in Gaelic. You had to have subtitles at the bottom. I didn't know they had a language in Ireland, but apparently they do, because they were speaking it. She and her husband, Frank, had been married like 35 years, and Frank makes his transition. And Rosie is grieving the loss of her husband. And as she's walking over the moors in Ireland, All of a sudden, this dog starts to chase after her. And she throws a rock. Go away, go away. But he wouldn't go away. And she waddles back. She gets to her little Irish cabin on the hillside. And the dog is still there. And she says, go away. And she's throwing the rocks at him. He manages to sneak in the door. And he jumps in Frank, her husband's, chair. Get out of his chair. Nobody sits in Frank's chair. So she chases the dog out. And she's cleaning up the chair. And the next thing you know, he's run into the bedroom. And he's lying on Frank's side of the bed with his head on the pillow. She chases him out of the house. She goes for a walk the next day, and he's following her. And so she lets him follow her, and he leads her to the place where her husband and she used to sit and look out at the whatever. And then she's starting to realize, holy, you know what? Is that you, Frank? And he looks at her, and she looks at him. And then she goes, oh, Frank. So she calls their one and only son, who's a doctor. And she says, your father's come back to me. She says, don't you remember what he said on his deathbed? And the son says, what did he say, Ma? He said, I'm not done with you yet. And so she says, he's come back as a dog. He says, Mom, I think you need to go and get some medical care. He was going to put his mother as certifiable. At the same time, the neighbor, who had kind of a crush on Rosie, he said, now that Frank's dead, do you think she'll go out and have a glass of wine with me? And you know, she even approached Rosie, and she said, oh, yeah, that sounds like a lovely thing. We'll have a glass of wine. But then she said, will Frank like that? Well, Frank, the dog, did not like her having a glass of wine with the neighbor. He chased him out of the house, and he gets hit by a car. He didn't. It was just a bump. But in the meantime, he said, this dog is dangerous, and so he called animal control, and he wanted Frank put down. So there's Rosie fighting for the life of the dog. And the son's saying, my mother's certifiable. We need to put her in an institution. And the whole thing, and I thought, as I'm laughing and crying at the same time, I said, well, this is here to prepare me for my sister's experience. So when I did get there, and there, you know, Mom is dead thing, and I said, well, you know, she really isn't. She lives on. And then I quoted from another cage, from the Bhagavad Gita, and I let them know it was from the Bhagavad Gita. They say spirit was never born and spirit never dies. So the beloved soul that was our sister, or their mother, is still here. She's just not in her body. And having said that, then we get to navigate the ashes. And it's always so fun because, you know, how am I going to meet this cage in a loving way so that it's not offensive? And so when the family from Idaho showed up, they showed up with a big urn, and there is your sister, and they threw it at me. I said, well, thank you very much. And I took the urn of my sister, and I have to do everything, I feel like. And so I found a big strapping guy like Bob, and I said, Bob, will you carry my sister down to the altar? So he carried the sister, and I'm carrying these little things to do this ritual. And there was one of her quilts. She was a quilter, so we had her quilt on the table. And my little sister had taken a photograph of my twin and myself when we went to the beach once. And she's got this low décolleté. She was rather gifted in this department. So this low décolleté with her gifts sticking up, smiling like a thing. And there I am standing next to her, and it's right by her urn, her ashes. Her son said, I don't want that picture of my mom there. She looks obscene. I said, she was pretty. She was at the beach, you know, and I didn't have another picture, so it's like, deal with it. So there she is smiling at the beach in her swimsuit, and there's her urn of ashes. And then there's another little picture over here where she's holding like a ping pong ball, looking kind of forlorn. And so you've got the dimensions of her. And this was at the place where she would always go and sit and just merge with oneness. You talk about something bigger. My little sister said she would sit there by the hour and watch the ocean go in and out on the Oregon coast. If you haven't been, it's breathtaking. And this was a place called Twin Rocks. It's interesting. Two rocks identical, and we are the twins. So her ashes are spread at Twin Rocks if you ever get out to the Oregon coast. And so I said to these kids that, you know, your mother's still here. And so what we get to do is we get to set her ashes free to her life's next great adventure as her soul chooses how it's going to navigate. And in the meantime, we get to claim the transmission and the gifts that she transmitted to all of us. Her wonderful sense of humor, her outrageous inclusivity. My twin sister would give you the shirt off her back. If you would give her a refrigerator, you needed more, she'd give you. This is who she was. She was altruistic in the highest sense. So everybody knew her, and she was kind of crazy. And that's what I loved about her. So as I love how grace works, because you're not in control. In fact, I was chanting this chant from the whole time I left Huntsville, and I'm still chanting it this morning. I let go of control. I release control and surrender to the love that surrounds me. to a love that heals me. I release control and I enter into a flow of a love all around me. I release control and surrender to the flow of the love all around me. All the love that will heal me. So I let go of the control person, which is difficult for me because that's kind of a little bit of an addictive place. And I surrender to this flow. And so when we had no more little cups to put the ashes in for them to go down the hill into the ocean, I said, well, now there's another alternative. You can open your hands like this. And my nephew, I called him my Vanna White, he scooped up a bunch of my sister and put her in the hands, and I exampled it. And then you put the top hand over it, you put it to your heart, and you walk down the hill where she would sit, down to the ocean, thanking her for the many blessings she gave you. And when you get to the water, you can place it into the water and set her soul free to the next glorious adventure. So as I'm walking down the hill, exampling this with the hands, I realized I had my blue jeans on and my sneakers, and the only sneakers I had, and I didn't want to walk into the ocean and get all wet. So that little niece's niece was sitting there, maybe 4 or 5. I said, would you like to carry my sister into the ocean? And she was not wearing shoes. So she took it in her little hand, and she moved down to the beach. I felt like I passed it on in a spontaneous sort of way. And then my nephew's new wife was kind of cold and detached and was not engaging anybody. Her name was April. I said, April, would you take my hand and hold my twin? So with my twin's ashes, they're very silky, on my hand, she took my hand. And so there we're standing in silence as this ritual is taking place all around me. When my little sister comes down, the only remnant of the family that's left, and she had her ashes, she's the one that's so grieving, she threw herself into my arms. And for like, I don't know, 5 minutes, I just held her as she sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And that, mind you, I haven't had a single tear at this whole experience because I'm trying to hold it together for the family. And it was so sacred to have this spontaneous celebration of someone's life, and I could tell how happy my twin would be that all her kids came to honor her life. And not from the dysfunction part of it, but from the sacredness of it, seeing the good, the God in all of this experience. And you know, sometimes you just show up for those moments and you trust that grace will assist you in how this is supposed to be. So we went through that incredible celebration of her life, and I got to witness, my nephews came up to me, and Uncle Scott, we don't know about our family. What was our grandfather like? What were our great grandparents? Nobody. And so now I carry the ancestry in me, like you do, Gigi. They want to know, what were our ancestors like? And I thought, holy cow, now we've got to dredge up the past. My father was an alcoholic. He was depressed. He was a womanizer. So, you know, that may have been the facts of the life, but he was also this beautiful, compassionate, loving man that raised us. So we can either look at the story of the dysfunction, or we can learn to forgive that part of the history and see that maybe that was necessary for the liberation of the soul so that we can do a deep forgiveness. One of the sweetest moments was the nephew who called my little sister sobbing because he had been less than nice to his mom growing up. And he said, I'm so sorry, Aunt Terry, that I treated her like she was my servant and that I would demand things from her. And so in that holy instant of his catharsis, there was this redemption, and he showed up as the most loving son, only praising his mother, not judging her. So I saw this healing that was taking place in this family that so desperately needed it. And I'm so grateful that I got to be there during that time. And now what I'm sensing, the idea that it's larger than ourselves, now they're all wanting an uncle that they never had. They all kept saying, you look so much like her. So now they want me as their uncle. And I'm thinking, am I up for this, Phil? And well, something in me is, whereas something in me doesn't know if I can do it, but I'll do my best to be there for them as they go through this. And you know, it's so funny. I do these series with 5 talks, this 5-month Sundays. And the first one was Court the Question. So I was courting the question, how can I be the loving uncle? How can I show up and do the right and perfect thing without an idea that it has to look a certain way? I came back on the plane with this woman who just moved to Huntsville, and she's kind of neurotic. And she was talking about her husband, and she has all these expectations of her husband, and he's not meeting her expectations. And she's questioning whether this marriage can work. And I said, you know, expectation is a sure sabotaging way in a relationship. If you have expectations, then you're trapped in your expectation. So it's like this little light bulb went off, and I thought, you have to practice what you preach, David. I don't have to have expectations either. And so when we let go of the expectation, and that's the question, how can I have no expectations? How can I be the loving? And then the second week, last week, was there's a web of knowing that we all access. That's the knower within. That's the loving brother who's there to say, this isn't about me. This is about how to create a beautiful healing for these kids around their mom and with each other, because they've been estranged from each other. So through my sister Pat's love, they came together, and now the love is still sustaining them. She still lives in them, and I reminded them of that. So this week I'm talking about larger than ourselves, and then the irony is next week the subject is, what is it? It's so crazy. How then are we going to meet adversity? Well, I think that probably should have been this Sunday, because I certainly met a lot of it. How are we going to meet adversity as you shift into freedom? And then the last one is entitled, If Another World Is Possible, What Would That Look Like? David pointed to that in our revealing service. Is it possible to have a healthy new way of relating in the world? Knowing that the world is compromised right now, and it requires people like us to see it with new eyes. That's the whole premise of Science of Mind. When you begin to see it as whole, well, then this perception of wholeness will ultimately manifest as wholeness. But first, we have to be willing to see it on the inside so that it can manifest on the outside, because it's all an inside job. So then you realize this is kind of a where the rubber hits the road kind of teaching. It's not theory. It's practice. So can we practice these ideas? Could I have a greater idea, knowing that when I hold that idea, another world is possible? I pulled out my little book, The Story of Gaia, and I was telling this woman, because she's an engineer and her husband is an engineer, they're scientists, and she's raised Catholic in a very kind of narrow way of perceiving things. And I said, you know, it is possible that science and spirituality can come together, and they don't have to be in conflict. And in this beautiful book, written by a PhD from Oxford, she talks about entropy and entropy. We've lived in a world of entropy where things are falling apart. And you might say our spirituality or religions are falling apart. But the entropy is when the truth begins to awaken and you realize it's universal. And so at the very end of this book, she talks about the necessity on the planet for this expanded, larger way of perceiving things. So she said, it's innate unity through the co-creative appearances and tensions of all dualities, with their universal masculine and feminine attributes, this then reconciles in the trinity of their child's expression. She talked about the trinity as about the universe, which we call the Father, the Son, which is manifestation, and the Holy Spirit is the life force. So it's all the trinity of being. It's not just about Jesus, God, and whatever. No, she takes it to a higher level. This is all spirit moving through form and revealing itself. So the flourishing in the diversity and the complexity of its ongoing journey, the one, Gaia, the one life, God's life, she takes it to a rubber hits the road idea, their flourishing in the diversity and the complexity of its ongoing journey will eventually come full spiral. It will come from unity consciousness into unity in diversity, where we think we're separate from the oneness, and then finally, ultimately, to a re-membered unity. We remember that there's only one here. And then, in belonging to this, there's an ultimate return to oneness. And then we begin to see through the eyes of oneness instead of through the eyes of the individual. So then the me moves, she says, into a we consciousness, and ultimately it's all the one life. Now that's the invitation for us to shift out of the smaller self into where we can see ourselves connected to everything. I love it that Nancy was terrified of spiders as a little girl, and now they're coming to be seen and to be embraced. Not so that she has to put them in her bed with her, but that she can smile, that she's no longer the little girl screaming at a spider, but she's saying, hey, there's a Charlotte in there somewhere. You know, I'm living by a simple premise of life, because life is kind of filled with a lot of doo-doo. So my mantra is, there's got to be a pony in this family somewhere. See if you can figure that metaphor out. So she said, we are the youngest of Gaia's organic children. The human is the last to come. We are the youngest. So Maybe there's wisdom in the octopus. What do you think, Gigi, or the old? She said, we embody her legacy and that of the universe soul. She's coined a phrase, not universal, but the universe soul, the one soul, the one life, a scientist. This is not a theologian. The universe soul, its evolutionary arc. And we stand together with them at the bow wave. Somebody was telling me about a bow wave. Was it you, Phil? The bow wave and sailing at that threshold? Well, somebody was. There's something in sailing. The bow wave is that threshold where the shift takes place. Someone was coming up after church. I read this before. At the bow wave of their and our next emergent possibility. Our next emergent possibility. Seamus, you haven't fully emerged yet. Well, there's a butterfly in there somewhere, I think, you know. And so our next emergent possibility, we are the last of our kind, yet we are not alone. We and her entire family are all part of Gaia. So Gaia is waking up. It's the story of Gaia. The sentience of Gaia is waking up. And guess what? It's you. It's me. So she closes this beautiful, big, big book with a prayer to the mother. Not as something that is just our finite mother, but the universal mother. And here's her little poem to the mother. She says, you made me with stardust. You gathered from the ancient suns. And you bore me in your primordial belly through long eons of possibility. And you birthed me naked and squalling, slippery with life's promise. Lovely image. You smiled as I squirmed in the dawn of a new day, lit by kindness. Everybody needs to look at David's t-shirt somewhere along the way because it says, choose kindness. Lit by kindness. You gentled me as I swaddled in the comfort of your breast. You grew me strongly with plant and fish, milk and meat. You taught me to know you and to know myself through you. You have always, she spells it A-L-L hyphen W-A-Y-S, always, in all ways, loved me. So thank you for loving me. I love you. Could we thank this one life that actually took up residence within us? And it's the same life that's in everything. And I love you. So we are that something bigger, waking up in time and space. So we move from the me to the we to the all, from entropy to entropy, the universal soul, with love and gratitude to all mothers, and especially to Gaia herself, our primary mother, we give thanks. So it's all the mother. And you know, it's so interesting when we were arguing cages and about the soul with my people who love to argue from the cage. I was read the Bible every morning. I said, you know, the soul's androgynous. I thought that might be a little way to open the door slightly. What do you mean it's androgynous? Well, the soul is both masculine and feminine. He mentioned it here. We have the yin, we have the yang. And I remember a Taoist once said, it's not yin or yang, it's yin yang. You cannot separate them. If you look at the symbol, yin yang. So we're all the inner masculine and the inner feminine. And within our inner masculine, we have the feminine. Within our feminine, we have the masculine. Doesn't that bring a sense of inclusivity? So when I talked about God, the Father, Mother, the Mother, Father, God, it's not, then you play with something more expanded. And it sets us free of our containers. Are we willing to let go of the container and do free fall, I wonder, in this world, where we get to discover what this greater something is? And so then I fell into, through grace, someone sent me this lovely little video of Llewellyn von Lee, and he talked about the imperative at this time on planet Earth for us to evolve into a greater way of bringing the beloved to the planet through the lover. The lover and the beloved are not separate. So when you look at me, Jesus said, you see the Father. Well, when you look at me, you could see David Leonard, but you could also see this beloved divine love moving through David because we're not separate. And so then Llewellyn, and I'm thinking of teaching this because it's so rich, most people can't handle it, but it's what feeds my soul. He's written a little book called For the Love of the Real. Could we love, and we're doing this trusting the gold, could we trust that something that goes beyond the local self with it, all its, you know, story and stuff? Could we put that story down and discover something beyond that, the real? at the very, very beginning, I just want to give you a taste. He said the Absolute, with a big A, is real. And it is the only thing that is real in the real terms. Now, there's the relative real, and there's the absolute real. So he's trying to take us from the widow me to this universal self. So the Absolute is real. The Absolute exists throughout every plane of creation. It is the source of all that is and is not. Here's the book that I always wanted written, David. Every cell of creation contains a seed or a substance of this absolute existence. Everything. The bunny rabbits that hop down the pathway of life. As I was driving to the center this morning, there was a baby armadillo that had been run over. I almost pulled off the road and picked it up because they're so primitive and so sweet in their oneness. Every cell of creation contains a seed or a substance of absolute existence. The light of the absolute travels through the planes of nothingness and existence. So we're invisible and visible. We're both form and emptiness. You begin to see the scientific relevance here. We are nothingness and we are also existence. And this is reflected off this substance in creation and all returns to source. So he's playing with the invisible and the visible. At the very beginning, we'll ponder this one. We'll go into detail later, but right now we're just saying, so the world of plants and animals, clouds and soil, beauty and horror is both a veil and a reflection of the real, with a capital R. It's revealed everywhere as the veil, which would be the appearance. So you think this is it, but then there's this invisible something within the veil. And so he talks about this experience through a heart aligned with truth, with a capital T. It is a place of divine revelation. Could we open to this divine revelation? Last Sunday, I shared with you, my prayer partner talked about Abraham Maslow, who wrote a book called Religion and the Peak Experience. And he said, Maslow, he's the one that wrote about the hierarchy of needs, how you start at that, where it's, you have to feed yourself, and then enlightenment is up here. But you have to start with the basic needs, feeding yourself, and then you move up to the revelation. And so Abraham Maslow, in his little book called Religion and the Peak Experience, said the trouble with most religions is they haven't had peak experiences. They haven't merged with oneness. They haven't experienced the love that knows no other. They're still caught up in the me and the you, and they have the judgment about what's right and what's wrong and good and evil and this fear-based spirituality. So, the world of plants and animals, clouds and soul, beauty and horror is both a veil and a reflection of the real, seen from the level of the ego. Seen from the level of the ego, it's a veil. It's an illusion. It's experienced through a heart aligned with truth. Then it is a place of divine revelation. So could we move out of this head that wants to judge it and label it and categorize it into what they call the heart of hearts, which is the space where God moves through our heart, that loving presence. So here's how he talks about that love. The heart has a number of different chambers, and the central chamber of the heart belongs only to the absolute. It's a metaphor. To find the heart of hearts, wherein God lies. The absolute. In Sufism, this is called the heart of hearts. It's the chamber in the heart, and it is the doorway to the real. So he's inviting us to step into something bigger. You know, when we inhale, we take in the presence, and when we exhale, we give it back. So something as simple and benign as the breath is a portal of oneness. The breath within the breath, the one life, revealing itself. And then you can play with the idea of the breath. We incarnate with a breath, and we leave this mortal coil with an exhalation. But we're still here, a spirit. So we get to play with that something bigger that's courting us. And sometimes when you have a death in the family, you get to say, what didn't die? Well, what didn't die was the love. What didn't die was this transmission of, Haley is still here. I remember saying that at Haley's memorial service. When I stood up in front of this church with grieving the loss of the form, Haley had come to me the night before and said, you have to tell them I'm still here. I'm just not in my body. Now, I know I sound certifiable when I say that, Barbara, but she did come to me, and they all seemed to come to me. I'm still here. I'm just not in my body. And then you get to relate at that spiritual level to that which was never born and never dies. And it's that journey, the journey home to the one that knows no other. So, yeah, those were my little touchstones to finding closure. In my wedding ceremonies, I use this phrase, and I told it to my brother-in-law and sister, that divine love brings together and maintains, this is Ernest Holmes, divine love brings together. So divine love's in charge. Divine love brings together and maintains together in harmony and balance, those who belong together. So if you have found a sense of harmony and balance, Gigi and Raul, well, divine love put that right there. You know, what if then, I was asked all the time about my partner in life, and I said, you know, we've been together 50 years, and I like to think that divine love brought us together. And, you know, he was the only one that I couldn't stand, yet we ended up together for 50 years. The only religion, the only thing I said I will never do for a career is become a minister. Well, I've been doing that for 34 years. And I said to the universe, the only place I won't go to practice ministry is Alabama. Well, guess what? I've been here for 34 years. So obviously, I don't have a clue how to direct this universe, but it has a sense of humor. It says, oh, you don't think you can handle this one? Try him on for 50 years. You don't think you can handle the opiate of the people, which is how I regarded religion. And in my day, it's scary because I was had a fear-based teaching. Well, now I found a spirituality that goes beyond religion. And so we get to say, holy cow, but I wouldn't have had it. I had a judgment about Alabama being a racist state. And as someone said, I find North Alabama to be one of the most healing places I've ever been. And my beloved Phil over here, he's working with the black community to create this bridge of understanding. In a way, he's a manifestation of David's prayer to have a book written. And how much, but you can't write the book until you have the peak experience. So he's going to give us the peak experience so we can have a different way of looking at it. And then you go, holy cow, I am being pulled by something greater than me. And each one of us is. Could we open to that? I release control and surrender to a flow of love that will heal me. We're going to play this sometime and Raul is going to sing it. And then you know what happens? Then you chant it back. I release control and surrender to the flow of love all around me. Love that will heal me. Could we let go of control and know that that love is waiting for us, that divine love? And it's the only thing that will heal us. It really has, we have to be healed at this deep, deep level. And I want to thank my twin because she still lives in me. She's outrageous as all get out. And I know for these next 2 weeks, I'm going to look at if this is possible and what really needs to be healed and how we can meet adversity. Because you know what about adversity I know? It's not a bad thing. It just shows up. Someone was calling me in the church, and I won't say who it was, every minute I was out there because they wanted me to be engaged in this person's drama. And I couldn't deal with it at that particular time. So sometimes I'm not the greatest at meeting adversity, but then sometimes I am saying, you know, you get to meet your adversity right now, and when you, we'll talk about it and see how we do. And then we communicate from the heart. Okay, I think time is running out, so I'm going to ask a beloved Paula over there to ring the bell, and I'm going to do a little meditation. We're going to do a little closing song, and put Adam DeMaribus in your hearts, because he was in a car accident Friday night, and he stopped by. He's in, got a lot of pain in his head, and let's hold him in our hearts to see the healing energy flowing through him, knowing that when we open to that healing energy, and we can direct it to anyone who knows is suffering at this particular. So, Paula, you want to just give me a one little ring? The mindfulness bell takes us home. Home to the breath. Home to the present moment, the only moment we ever had. As we consciously breathe into that moment, that sacred moment, we say, I have arrived, I am home. In that field of awareness that knows no other, where it's the one life waking up, that something greater that we all share, that web of knowing that comes from within the knower who abides within all creation, that intelligence in the universe. And we smile. Because this intelligence doesn't have a rule book, doesn't have a preference and a bunch of rules. This intelligence is love itself. And as my brother-in-law said to me, he said, love is not a noun, love is a verb. And then he went on to conclude love was really an action. So could we expand our awareness of love, not as an emotion that we have? There is a felt awareness around love, but what if it is an action of showing up in life, embracing what is, and serving the moment from the deepest place of connectedness. We start from oneness, from unity consciousness. We move into diversity, where we see the 10,000 things they speak about in Taoism. All is the Tao, they say. The Tao and the 10,000 things. A metaphor showing how the one splits into the many. But then we realize that the 10,000 things wake up and the Tao is looking through them. The one life is looking through them. And so we have an option here to see ourselves as interconnected, interbeing with the one life. And in that, we get to embrace ourselves within and all around. The only thing that's required is that we release control. And then we surrender to that which doesn't need to be in control. And then feel the love all around us, the love within us as the same love, knowing that will heal us. And the irony is that we don't even need to be healed because we're already whole in this true nature of the one life. So take a deep integrating breath. With an exhalation, let go of whatever it is that needs to be released with gratitude, claiming the gift that it has brought to you. One more integrating breath. I arrived in this sacred space of the one life, and I smile as I exhale. Thank you, beloved. This life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And then we trust in the unfoldment of light and love within and all around. If you will, place your hand over the heart of hearts, somewhere at the core of your being, and join with me in the heart salutation by saying to this divine love, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the emerging light of the One.
You are the emerging light.
Shining brightly.
Shining brightly.
Everywhere throughout creation.
And we witness you.
We celebrate you.
And we
give
you.
So that we may all shine as the one light, the one love,
seeing itself again
as home. When you're ready, open your eyes. Take a sigh like Michael did. All is well. So thank you, beloveds.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.